I knew the Hellcat mandate. I knew her growing up.
So what's good with you, bro? You just been chilling?
Chilling, bro, chilling. Honestly, I was asleep as fuck before today, bro. Early before the pod, bro.
It was a wild fucking long weekend, day, man.
Yeah. Bro, well, we've been on a bender. Well, I've been on a bender, probably worse than this guy.
Nah, you for sure.
I was looking like a 4-day bender, bro. Like,
I feel you.
When you come back, is it like crazy? Like,
dude, I literally got off the plane, and I get 10 text messages from Stimmy Alex, fucking Jaylene. Like,
I didn't know you were here until Alex posted you later. I was like, oh shit.
Yeah, bro, I get a text, like, because a lot of people here have my location.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So I had gotten like 10 messages because I posted that I was on a plane. On my close friends, and they were like, oh, where are you going? And then I landed, and everybody checked my location, and then I got to, like, literally from the plane to later. I didn't stop anywhere. Like, I got literally brought to later. And I was so fucking, like, tired because my layover was long, and I had no choice because my ride was like, we're leaving your bags in the car and we're going.
Oh, I'm just gonna do a little quick sound check, make sure everything sounds good.
What's up, man?
What's
just
up, popping over here, man?
For real, this boy comes into town and just fucking.
He's booked up. He's booked up.
For real.
Nah, bro.
That's badass, bro.
I'm gonna work on not using the word like. What's that called when you have speech?
Speech impediments. Like filler words.
Filler words. Like how Obama says.
The test one too.
That's essential.
Americans. Nah, just kidding. Damn, bro. Episode 51 of The Most Vulnerable Player. A pleasure, man. With Mr. JD. Have you ever released your real name to the public?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. Do you want to do that today, or are we?
Yeah.
What's
so JD is actually my initials.
Okay.
JD stands for Justin David. So my last name's Heinrich. My mom's Mexican Italian, and my dad was German. So when my dad passed away, the reason why I go by JD is because when he passed away, my grandpa looked at me in the hospital room and asked me if he could call me JD, because that was, my dad was Justin David Sr. and I was Justin David Jr. So they called him JD and they called me Justin or Bubba. So yeah, that's how that became my artist name. And that was before I started making music. But when I made my first song and people were like, what are you going to go by? I thought back on that moment.
Yeah.
So
JD.
JD.
Sorry. Yeah, you said you've only been making music since 2022?
Yeah, 2022 was when I made my first song.
Damn, bro. I mean, looking at you now, I would have guessed you'd have been fucking making music for at least like 5 to 8 years, bro.
Minimal.
Yeah, especially, I think it helps too, bro, that you already have that like videography and like cinematography and editing background. Mm-hmm. So your content is just like on a whole nother level too. So I feel like if other artists were able to have that skill set, like I feel like it's just a good combo to have, you know?
Yeah, I feel like it was honestly perfect timing. When I joined the Air Force, which I don't talk about really ever, because that wasn't really, I think what they offered me and everything I learned was really significant. And the skill sets that I gained and all the knowledge, job knowledge that I learned was definitely worth it. But had I not joined the military, I don't think I would have ever made music.
Damn.
It all started so cohesively. I picked up a camera because my homies that I worked with on base, they were rapping. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not going to use quotation marks. They actually rap.
Yeah.
One of them has produced, like, he currently has like 15,000 monthly listeners, and he doesn't have social media. You cannot find him anywhere.
Wow.
And but his music like speaks for itself. And my other friend, I just call him Slime because he doesn't like me saying his name. But he's from New Orleans, and he makes, dude, it's phenomenal music.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a single song out. He has like over 400 unreleased songs. So I picked up a camera to film for them, and as I'm picking up the camera, they also started letting me rap and like make R&B music. So everything literally started that, like, in that moment. It was really crazy.
Yeah. So you grew up in Stockton?
Yeah, I grew up in Stockton, California.
Okay. The only thing I know about Stockton is Nate Diaz. So you gotta give me some background on what's Stockton like, man. What was your upbringing like there?
So Stockton overall has this very, I don't want to say negative image. There's a lot of good that comes from Stockton. Historically, Stockton was very much enriched by the Delta River, because the Delta is like this large body of water where its pretty much main point of entry is in Stockton. So we had the port of Stockton, which we would like have a ton of goods being imported, and like a lot of import export business was coming out of Stockton. But the history of it is basically the city of Stockton has just gone bankrupt so much. And it's a low income city in California. It's about an hour from Oakland, an hour and a half from San Francisco. And a lot of impoverished families will move from the Bay Area and come to Stockton because it's cheaper. It's a very cheap city in California. So over the years, it just naturally became very dangerous. I grew up in Northside Stockton, and I had two parents, man. I had a good mom and dad. They kept my nose clean for sure. I was never a bad kid. Mm-hmm. I definitely have friends in those like type of environments, and I grew up around that a lot. Like, one thing everybody from Stockton will tell you is, as much as there might be a gated community in this spot of town, or there might be a nice set of restaurants here, there's really no like safe or nice place in Stockton. And I don't know. We'll see what happens. I have high hopes for the city. I love that place to death. That's my hometown. And there's a lot of good people from there. Like, it's not all bad. There's beautiful places everywhere. And it's got a really good community. There's a lot of history there. I love it.
For sure. And so what did you kind of do growing up?
So I was like any other like young kid. Like, we all played sports and video games. I skateboarded a lot. My first job was I was like 13 years old, and I was working at a skate shop. I would just go in on the weekends when I wasn't in school, and I would basically be there 8 hours Saturday and Sunday per day, just making boards and selling shoes to kids. And the guy that owned the skate shop, I call him my uncle, like, it's Uncle Ray. And he like looked out for me. He would give me, like, I remember when the Pink Panther SBs came out, when Nike gives shoes to like skate shops, they have to raffle them, but he had like reserved a pair, and my mom bought the pair off him, and he was always looking out for me, giving me laces and shoes and helping me out if I needed a new board. And yeah, I played baseball my whole life. That was like a really big piece of my life growing up.
And what did you envision yourself like doing?
I was like, honestly, I was really just like very sporadic. I wanted to play baseball. That was my main thing. Obviously, when you're a kid and you spend Monday through Friday practicing something every day, you spend your whole childhood being like, I want to be a baseball player. I want to be a football player. There was kids that wanted to be doctors or policemen because their dads were doctors or policemen. You know what I mean? It's like, I feel like whatever you spend all your time around is what you kind of tend to want to become. So yeah, I'd say baseball player was a big one. And I remember at one point when I was a kid, I wanted to become a farmer. Like, I wanted to do like agricultural business when I was like 12, 13.
Where'd that come from?
My middle school had a trade elective program where there was like a separate campus for trade jobs. So there was like a wood shop class, welding, there was an auto class, and there was also like a drafting class, like making blueprints and stuff. And the guy that I took drafting with, he kind of introduced me to agricultural business. I was like 13, 14 at the time, and that was something that I really wanted to do, and my dad was like, yeah, you should go to school for that. So yeah, it was just those two, to be honest.
Yeah.
I never really envisioned myself joining the military and making music.
Thinking about like that immediately makes me think of Arturo, and because he mentioned that podcast to earlier. But yeah, he's literally in that business, bro, and he made a killing for a while.
Yeah. That's something that I thought, because when you're a kid, I don't know if you guys had that moment where you're going to school and you have that realization that money's a thing when you're kind of edging like the end of high school. And I just remember being in this like space where I was like, what am I going to do for money? Like, what am I going to do when I leave here? Because I had no intention on going to college. Mm-hmm. I applied to college, and I ended up like going to a junior college for like a month and dropped out, and then COVID, like all of these things culminated into me just joining the Air Force. But I just was like researching stuff, and I didn't want to be a doctor. I didn't want to become a cop because my whole family was like correction officers and sheriffs and ex-military. So I was like, ag business is the route, I guess. My dad had a homie that did it, and he was making like six figures plus yearly starting out. And I was me 16, 17, I was like, whoa, that's crazy.
Yeah. God. Your path into the military was basically from like you dropping out of college and you're just like... Like military, it was
like, what now?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was working at Firestone. I was a service specialist. Basically means I just worked at the front end, answered phone just calls. Greeted people and shit. Made sure you got the right tires on your car. Right. I was just like printing receipts and scheduling appointments. And I remember working there, and my dad was very sick at the time, and my dad's best friend, I call him my Uncle Clayton. My dad, literally, as much as they were like brothers, the things that he did, like, he looked at Clayton like, oh, I wish I went this route. Because my dad was very much like an entrepreneur, and he struggled a lot, and like, it took a long time for him to get to the point where he was like able to take care of everybody in his family. Whereas my Uncle Clayton joined the Navy, and he was an EOD, which is like essentially bomb squad. Like, mm-hmm. he was a explosive ordnance. I forget what the acronym stands for. And he was in the Navy for, I think, 8 years, 10 years, and then left the Navy and started working for Sacramento PD. And his life turned out very well put together. He had he had real intention behind what he was doing, and he never had to worry about not getting paid, because obviously when you're working as a police officer or working in the military, first and the 15th, you're always getting paid. So it was a lifestyle that my dad, just the consistency is what he wanted. So he wanted that for me. Mm-hmm. So there was like a year solid where almost every day I was waking up in the morning, putting on my Firestone uniform, and he was like, why don't you just join the Navy? Mm-hmm. Like, talk to Clayton, join the Navy, join the Air Force, do something. Get out of my fucking house.
Basically.
Literally. And I was 17 at the time, so I'm like, why is he tripping so hard? And then
so you graduated early?
Yeah, I was 17 when I graduated. So when I turned 18, that's like when everything kind of started getting put together. I met my recruiter. And yeah, dude, I left to see the recruiter for the first time, I think, right after my 18th birthday in September. And then, just end of December 2020, I was gone.
Yeah, what'd you move to?
I went from Stockton to San Antonio, and that was where my basic training was. And then from San Antonio, I went to Wichita Falls, Texas, which was right outside of Dallas, maybe an hour and a half. And then I went there for airman in training, AIT school. So I was just learning my job for, I think it was 35 days, but school days. So that turned out to be like 2 months roughly. Loved that. That was probably my favorite experience about the military, because you leave basic training and like this mindset of being told what to do, and you're just so go, go, go. And then you kind of get your freedom back, and you're around everybody who also just got their freedom back. So everybody is kind of on a high on life. Mm-hmm. You know, you're like all excited to have your phone back and to call your family. And people are a lot more grateful for things they weren't grateful for before they left, because as much as basic training in the Air Force is short, it's only like 9 weeks, 10 weeks, as much as it's a short thing, like 10 weeks, like the amount of what you're doing and how heavy that is on some people, because some people go there with nothing and leave with all these friends and like peers and your wingmen, and some people go there with a lot, like a lot of family, and they're leaving all of that behind, and then they leave with nothing, and now they also have all these newfound like family members. And so AIT is like a really good experience. You're just playing basketball after class, and you're going to the gym with whoever your roommate is, and there's UFC fights going on, and we're going to each other's barracks rooms and watching UFC and hanging out.
It's kind of like a college experience a little bit.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. We lived in dorms. You have like common areas with barbecue pits, and the big thing there was what are those things called where you hang them on a tree, and hammock.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Everybody like had a hammock. That was a big thing. It was like, oh, if you see somebody with a hammock, like that's it was
into it's it. Like a red flag or something, or
you can't bring women into your barracks room. So we had hammocks.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a bad. I never no.
Not hammock man, huh?
That's not crazy.
A hammock man.
It's crazy work. But damn, yeah. It seems like you actually like you really enjoyed it then, the military or the Air Force itself.
I'm not going to beef it up, because I think there was a point in time where for my first year and a half, 2 years, because I wasn't making music and I wasn't doing videography, the first year, 2 years I was in the military, that was my life. So I was working hard, and I was kind of, I think my problem was, bro, is I never, I was professional and respectful, but I also understood that everybody was human. So I would talk to my peers and talk to my NCOs and my leadership like they were people. I would try to have normal conversations, and that can either be a good thing or that can be a bad thing, because you might be my superior and you enjoy that I talk to you like a regular person, that I'm having conversations with you. And then he might be like, well, there's standards and there's this, so you shouldn't even be talking to me about personal things right now. We're here to work. So that was kind of my issue, was that I there was a switch that sometimes I just couldn't turn off. Mm-hmm. Like there was that switch where I was like, and I was also young, dude. I was 19, 18 and thrown into the fire with a bunch of 30, 40 year olds. And
Yeah,
but it wasn't hard, dude. I had fun, and I learned a lot, but I don't talk about it much. It's just like, it was just whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, who's cool?
Yeah, it seems like that's a really big thing in the military's, what do you call it? Yeah, just your ranks and just like seniority and standard. Especially who you know. It's like a lot of politics, huh?
Yeah, there's a lot of politics. Honestly, that's one thing that I really thought was cool, especially with what we got on October 10th with the mental health day.
Like, yeah.
That was one thing that I think a lot of people respected me for that I worked with, was I was very big on that, especially after my dad had passed away. Because you have to realize when you get stationed somewhere like Alamogordo, New Mexico, when we're there in the middle of White Sands in the desert, you have nothing to do but be around the people you work with. I'm spending Monday through Friday with you. I'm waking up and seeing your face and going home and doing it all over again every day. Like, I live next door to you. My dorm room is right next door to yours. So we're leaving work and I'm just seeing you all day, every day. So you just naturally become family with these people.
Yeah.
And I loved everybody that I worked. There's not a single person that I worked with out of the 70 or so that I met over the last 3 years that I disliked. Yeah. We were all close, and we all went through things, and some people had their cliques or their go-to person. And I just remember for me when my dad passed, like, I just kind of like trapped myself in my barracks room. I didn't leave. I would like shut the lights off and just listen to music and sit in my bed and stare at the ceiling, dude. And I just remember like feeling that low point and not wanting anybody to feel how I felt. And then I realized, like, I feel like that's when compassion and empathy became a really big thing for me, because up until that point, I had always looked at things very lightly. I was very much like,
quit being soft.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a realist approach.
Yeah, very realist approach. And then I had that aha moment where I was like, no, this is real. Like, there are people that wake up every morning feeling like this, and I'm feeling like this because of X reason, where there's some person that just wakes up feeling like that because that's just how their brain works. And another big thing of that, which I won't dive too deep in because it's a personal thing for somebody else, but I remember one of my closest friends, he has that issue. He suffers from mental health, mental illness. And seeing how that affected him and living with him and being there. And so this is somebody that I looked at as like a brother. Like, this is the guy that I was so close to, like, that I worked with and was coming home with every day. And like seeing how that affected him really for me was like, yeah, this is like, that's when I started reading up like self-help books, spending time learning how to cope with like other people's triggers. Like, there were certain things that would trigger him that I had to learn to, you know, as your friend and as somebody that I'm close to, out of respect for you, I have to learn how to handle those situations and how to make sure that I'm not making you feel the way that you feel whenever you kind of go down this, like, I can't even describe it. It was just a really big moment for me. Like, and I just started reading up a lot and being more in tune with how I felt and how other people's felt.
Yeah. And how did you, because you said your dad was sick. Were you able to kind of like prepare for it in a way? Or like, nothing's ever going to prepare you for the actual moment. Is it something you guys were expecting or prepared for, you know?
I was 15 or 16 when I found out he had cirrhosis.
Yeah.
And
what is cirrhosis?
It's like liver disease. So it's basically, it happens when you're an alcoholic. So that's its cause and effect, basically. Yeah. And my dad was diagnosed with cirrhosis when I was a sophomore, junior in high school. And so we kind of had to sit down as a family and have that family meeting and be like, this is a possibility. Like, he may not be here in a year, 2 years. But then we also were like, well, he can just get a liver transplant. But to get a liver transplant, and I never did the research on it. I could be lying. But I'm pretty sure there was, you had to be sober for 6 months to be eligible for a new liver. So you had to be sober, and then they would put you on a wait list for a new liver. But my dad can never stay sober, dude. Like, we're talking about a guy that I grew up watching take down like a 12 pack a day of Bud Light. And I'm recycling his cans for money for fucking ramen. And high C when I go skate. I'm using his recycling money. So it was just really difficult for him. And my dad dealt with a lot of stress, and he had very bad mental illness. He suffered from like extreme stress, had severe depression. And he was just an addict. And I think my dad felt like everybody's weight was on his shoulders all the time. He kind of took that, he took the responsibility of being like, I need to be the breadwinner. I need to be the one to take care of my son, my daughters, my wife, my grand, my parents, my sister and my brother and their kids. And, he took on that role without really recognizing how it was impacting him and kind of just kept going with it. And, so I kind of saw it coming, but as a 16-year-old kid, especially a young man, my dad was my role model. That was my best friend. So in the back of my mind, I'd be in the shower some days being like, dude, my dad could die like tomorrow. And then I'd also be like, but he'll be all right. You know what I mean? He'll be fine. So when he actually passed away, it was actually really crazy. So when I joined the military in basic training, my house burned down and I lost everything. So every piece of clothing I own, every...
In Stockton?
In Stockton.
Was there like a... How did that happen?
The dryer exploded.
Oh,
and
shit.
Burned down the whole house. So, yeah, dude, like literally at 18, I had to rebuild my life from like the ground up because all I had was at my dad's house. I had my mom's house too, but I didn't really have much there. So, yeah, dude, I lost everything. So that house burned down, and then literally I come home after AIT. I see my dad, and he's not really doing well. Because with cirrhosis, you develop jaundice. So your skin yellows, and then you also start to bloat a lot.
Mm.
And it was really weird. So, yeah, I remember I saw him and my baby brother. He was maybe 2 years old at the time. And I was there for 7 days. And I hugged him and my brother goodbye because I had to go to Alamogordo. It was my first duty station. I had to report for base. And I remember I left and I was calling my dad. And I remember he flew somewhere and he called me and he was just very like off-putting. Very much just, yeah, I'm okay. I'm fine. How are you? Whatever, whatever. And it really like started to creep up in the back of my mind. Like maybe he wasn't doing okay. And I remember in August 8th. I think is when he passed, but August 7th, I got a phone call from my mom. And
this is
2020, like all fucked up. 2021. Yeah. So, so 2021. Yeah. I get a phone call from my mom. She's crying. And that's when like instantly I knew. And I would literally had just gotten to my cousin's house on the west side. And we were going to go out. We were going to go. There was like a kickback.
Wait, so you had moved back to El Paso, or you had moved to El Paso from the...
So I kind of jumped over something.
Yeah.
I have a lot of family here.
Yeah.
So when I was stationed in Alamogordo, I would come here on the weekends to spend time with my family.
Gotcha.
So I remember the one weekend where my dad passed, I came to El Paso on a Friday. It was like 7:30 maybe, 8 o'clock at night. And we were like all getting ready to hang out. We were going to have a movie night. We were going to chill, get food. And I just get that phone call. And I remember I had barely met my cousins. I had only known them for maybe a month at that point. And they were just so welcoming. And I did not want to have that breakdown in front of them. So when my mom tells me this, I'm coming down the stairs. And they're on the couch, like all four of them. And I remember like, hey guys, I'm going to go to the garage really quick. And I go to the garage, dude, and everything just dropped. My heart dropped, tears falling down. And I just couldn't believe it. And my first sergeant and all my NCOs call me and they're like, hey, we're getting with the Red Cross. We're getting your work situation figured out. We're going to get you on a flight today. Like you need to be gone today. So, my cousin Robin's, boyfriend at the time, Charles, he ended up really looking out for me. The only flight available was in Albuquerque. Cause El Paso like didn't have anything left. And the flight was at like 4:30 in the morning. And like I said, this is 8 o'clock at night and Albuquerque's what, 3.5-4 hours away.
Yeah.
So, he dropped all his plans and had only known me for 2 weeks. This like we're practically strangers. And he drove me all the way to Albuquerque and I've gotten a flight and said goodbye to my dad. He was on life support when I got there. I landed. My best friends were there for me. And all of my best friend Jamal's family was like waiting downstairs in the hospital. And I walk in the room and everybody kind of respected the fact that I wasn't home. So they let me sit next to my dad. And it was a lot. It was a crazy experience.
Well, I mean, that's like at least being there for the last like moments, like, I mean, yeah, that's heavy stuff, man. And then even like, I mean, not to like put you out there, Vic, but like you went through the very similar thing, like literally like this past year.
Oh, really?
So,
sorry to
hear that. Yeah, dude, it's just, yeah, it's crazy how like life is, but man, yeah, that's,
Yeah, it's deep, bro. I don't wish that upon anybody, but I was actually just telling her over here, when it happened, it wasn't for some people that might be something, like I said, where I was going to my dorm room and I was like turning the lights off and coping with it in my own way. But for a lot of people, that can be a very destructive moment in their lives, mm-hmm. especially losing someone that significant. Because I don't think anybody expects to lose their father at such a young age. You know, my dad was only 44 years old. He was still very much a young man.
No, I was young as
hell. Yeah, he was young. So, but honestly, like, I had, like, this three-day rule. So when I went back to Alamogordo and I had to get back to my normal life, like, after the third day, I was like, I can't think about this anymore. I can't turn it back. I can't change what happened. I can't blame anybody. And I'm not going to let this be the thing that defines what I do for the next 2 years and how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember just recognizing that. And my sister had sent me a really long text message, and she says, I don't remember, I'm going to paraphrase here, but she sent me a text message essentially saying, take this as a moment to develop the personality and character traits that we've been lacking because of everything that was going on in our family dynamic with my dad's alcoholism and his gambling addictions. And she just pointed out, like, this can be an opportunity for you to learn compassion, you to be empathetic towards people. This can be an opportunity for you to do the things that you wanted to do, because I was always doing things to please my dad, not to do it for myself. Mm. So that's also, like, when I started kind of being more creative and artistic, because I'd always been musically inclined. I was in band in school. I was performing at jazz clubs and I was playing the drums and I was the drummer for my church. And I was always interested in these things. And my dad thought it was cool, but he was never like, I want you to do this. Right. Like, I see you doing this and I want you to continue doing it. It was more of, hey, remember after you perform at church on Sunday, you have baseball practice, please be home on time. Or, hey, I know you have, band rehearsal for worship on Wednesday. Remember, you need to be up in the morning because you have 5 a.m. workout. So it was like I was doing something that my dad thought was neat, but he never saw it as like what it is now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
right.
My sister sent me this long paragraph, and she was like, "Take this opportunity to like be you, dude. Like, finally live for yourself." I always thought, like, because I was named after my dad, I had to be my dad.
Mm-hmm.
So it was and that was something he used to always tell me. Like, whenever I got in trouble or fucked up, he would look at me and be like, "What's your name?"
Yeah.
And I'd be like, "Justin David Heinrich." And he'd be like, "What's my name?" And I would say his name back. So it was almost like we were kind of imitating each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a weird thing, but yeah.
And how did you, because you say you have that three day rule, and I'm sure, like, it really, like, you're able to, I mean, probably, like, get back into your routine and stuff, but with the long-term, like, just, like, effects of, like, experiencing that, like, what's the advice you'd give to someone who maybe is going through the same thing or something similar of how to really just not even get over it, but just kind of, yeah, learn to accept it and, yeah, eventually just get to that place where they can, like, just move on, you know?
I think my best piece of advice would be what really helped me is enjoy the little things. Mm-hmm. That's such a common phrase and it's something you hear all the time. But when that happened, that's what kicked it into reality for me. I was enjoying those like inconveniently long drives because it was the one time a day where it was quiet and I mm-hmm. can enjoy silence. Silence is a beautiful thing. So I started to learn how to enjoy the silence. I started to learn to like not neglect the negative things that happened with me and my dad. I started to take those as learning moments as opposed to just why did this happen? It was, okay, how did this happen and what can I do about it?
Mm-hmm.
I would just say, look forward, give yourself something to look forward to. I was looking forward to the next time I could go home so I could spend time with my family that was still there. I just think it's being able to find your lane. For me, that so happened to end up being music, and that ended up becoming a really big thing. And I know for some people, it's, you know, creating what you're doing here, or it's just diving into something that they didn't normally ever give time to. So I don't know. The 3 day rule for me was almost basically just like, in 3 days from now, something else in my life is going to happen that's going to take over what already did.
Mm-hmm.
So in 3 days, I'm going to have other things to do. Just because this happened doesn't mean my life stops. I still have to go to work at 7 a.m. I still have I was taking a college class online at the time. I still have coursework to do. I still have family to go see in El Paso. I still got to go to the gym. I still got to do all these things. So life doesn't stop. So just give yourself something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how long did it take you to make that like mental transition?
I'd say probably like 2 weeks. 2 weeks after he died, that's when I was like, okay, it's time to really like lock in.
Right.
Because I was getting, it felt like everybody was calling me and telling me how it affected them, my aunts and my grandparents and my stepmom at the time. And I was never calling people and telling them how it made me feel. Mm. I felt like everybody else was kind of just like calling me and telling me what was going on. So I just realized I'm already handling everybody else's emotions and how they're feeling. And I feel like I'm okay. It's just time to move on. Like,
yeah.
It's nothing else is going to happen. And I'm also very religious. Like, I feel like Jesus played a huge role in my transition. And it was like a waking moment for me. So, yeah, for sure. Fire.
Damn. And so you end up, so how long were you in the Air Force for?
So I was active duty for 3 years, and then I transitioned from active duty. I sacrificed the year left I had on my contract, and I traded it for 2 years in the Guard. So now I'm actually currently still in the National Guard. Mm-hmm. And I just check in twice a month and, do my trainings. And
where is that at?
San Jose in the Bay Area. So my new base is in, it's a small town called Mountain View, California. It's like right outside of San Jose, about an hour from San Francisco. San Francisco. And it's cool.
You just drive down there?
Yeah, I just drive down there from LA. It's about 4.5 hours, 5 hours, and then I get a hotel room they provide for me. And honestly, like, this might go off very bad, but that aspect of my life is just in the back of my mind. It's honestly not in my focus at all. I'm going to college now, and I'm taking this music and media full time. I think the military is just something that's kind of more of a foundational piece of my life now. It's not something that I'm very much like super passionate about. Yeah. There was a point where I was, but not anymore.
For sure.
Yeah. So now I'm going on this was year four. So in January, it'll be year five.
And you're 22?
22.
22. You just turned 22 like a couple weeks ago,
literally 2 weeks
ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your take on like the military and mental health? Do you think
they're getting better? But it definitely depends on where you're at, who you're with. You can be in the middle of nowhere and have the best leadership ever, and that's your family, and they're keeping you like on the straight and narrow, and they're making sure that you're okay. Or you could be in the middle of nowhere and have the worst leadership ever, so now you're in the middle of nowhere with people that you don't like and a job that you don't want to go to. Yeah. And you have nowhere else to go. I think their resources are getting better. They helped me. And I know that there's a lot of people that they ended up helping, that I worked with. So yeah, they're getting better. They're trying.
Yeah. And so what was your,
job?
No, 'cause you said you would drive from Alamogordo to El Paso. Did you live in El Paso for a while? After? 'Cause I mean, you were doing a lot of like
work here.
Yeah.
So I say I lived in El Paso because I practically was, dude. Yeah. Like, I was staying with family here 4 days out of the week, where I had work in Alamogordo Monday through Friday. Mm. But when I started working for Madhouse, I was here Thursday to Sunday.
Mm.
So I would get here Wednesday night and stay with my tia Josie or stay with my cousin Maylene. And I'm just at their house, and I would literally, this is how my days Thursday to Sunday would go. Especially Thursday and Friday, because I still had work in the military. So Thursday, I would go to HQ and do my work as a photographer. And I would get there at 10 p.m. and I would leave at 2 a.m. I would drive back to Alamogordo and get home at 3:30 in the morning and wake up for work at 6 a.m. Or I would drive to my cousin's house and I would stay at their house and wake up at 5 a.m. and drive to Alamogordo and get to work at 7. And I would get off of work on Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. and come right back to El Paso and then just stay here till Sunday. And then I would work Sunday fun day till 2 in the morning, drive all the way back to get up for work at 6 in the morning.
Damn,
yeah,
bro.
I was doing that for 2 years.
That's insane work.
Yeah.
How did you come across like getting the Madhouse gig and all that?
So when Louis had put on the Kodak Black Show, he had hosted a competition for local artists to open up. So I ended up submitting my name on the voting poll on Facebook, and I posted on my story. And it was around this time where I was making TikToks, like military related TikToks, and I had recently gained like 20,000 followers on TikTok.
Oh shit.
And I posted it on my story on Instagram, and I made a video about it on TikTok, and I ended up getting like 500 votes in the span of 24 hours.
Damn.
So I was like, I think I was the number one person on the poll, and not even being from here. And this was before I had any friends, before I started working for Madhouse. I didn't know a single person in El Paso that wasn't my family.
Yeah.
So I had all these votes that were from coming from like California and Arizona, like people that aren't even from here. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I ended up performing at the show. I met Louie. That's how I ended up meeting Cyrus. That's how I ended up meeting Nick and all them. And I didn't get the gig. I ended up losing. They did enjoy the music though. It would be weird for me to open up for Kodak Black. My music's not tailored towards that at all.
Yeah.
So yeah, I ended up meeting them that way, and then I followed Madhouse. And then 2 weeks later, Louie had posted that he was looking for photographers. And I don't know if Louie actually knows this. I don't think I've ever told him this, but when I started working for him, I had never actually like taken photography seriously, and I didn't even own a camera.
That's wild.
I was borrowing the same cousin that her boyfriend drove me to the airport. He had a Canon EOS R camera that he just didn't use, and I was like, yo, I just got this gig with Madhouse. I will give you $30 a weekend to let me use your camera.
It's hard.
So he was letting me use his camera, and then my sister ended up a couple months later giving me her Sony, and it's the same Sony that I use to this day. And yeah, I've literally started learning how to do photography and videography through Madhouse.
After you got the job.
After I got the job.
That's crazy. After work. I got the
job.
That's fire, bro.
Yeah. And we're here now. Now I've gotten to do a bunch of cool shit. I got to work with Saya. She's an actress from BET, and she's been on The Purge and Station 19 and a bunch of stuff. I've gotten to do Gigi McGree. She's a huge techno house DJ from Australia. I've gotten to do Group Chat, which is hosted by Gesture, who's one of Insomniac's guys. And I got to shoot for this company called Bad Apple Records, who throws these underground raves in the Bay Area and in LA, and they're all good friends of mine from when we were younger. And through Seb, I don't know if you know who Life of Seb is on Instagram, but
it sounds familiar.
Seb, yeah, so right now he's on tour with Peso Pluma. And yeah, he brought me on as an assist for a shoot with Tito Double P, who's one of like Peso Pluma's artists, and I got to do a shoot with him. And yeah, it's a surreal feeling, dude. I'm starting to work with people that are actually in the scene, like that are actually doing it. And it's really cool, and especially when I do photography for DJs who are performing at Academy LA or performing at a festival, and I'm on stage in front of 6,000 people or 1,200 people in a club, and I'm getting to do that. It's so cool, and I love it. It's
for sure.
I take it very seriously now, but yeah.
That's hard.
Yeah, it's fire, dude.
That's crazy, bro. How you just started with photography and then just fucking just kind of maneuvered your way in there, bro.
Yeah, I'm trying to find a way to, I guess, find balance in it all with photography and music, because I do notice that when I do DM artists to say, hey, I do concert photography, freelance videography work, recaps, all that type of stuff. When I reach out to them and they go through my Instagram and they find out that I make music, it's kind of like a conflict of interest. Mm. Because yes, I do provide a decent, not decent, but I think my photography is getting really good actually. Mm-hmm. But I do provide a good service, but it's also like I'm making music. So I could be seen as just this kid with a camera trying to get into this room.
Mm.
You know, like I've reached out to R&B artists and rappers from LA, and like I'll just get left on scene, and I'm pretty sure that's the main reason.
Yeah.
Because I have my Shot by JD page.
I was going to say, is that why you created a
Shot by JD?
Yeah.
Yeah. I created Shot by JD because I figured out that also I just wanted to separate the media side of me from the artist side, because I take my artist side so much more seriously. And I posted a story recently where I said, I thought that a lot of people that followed me didn't take me as an artist seriously, because almost everybody that follows me knows me in real life or has met me in real life.
Yeah.
And it's a strange thing. I'm sure you guys feel the same way with how you guys have the podcast, and you guys are, people don't see the hour it takes to prep or the 4 or 5 hours it takes to edit. People don't see the intention behind it or what you want to do with it. They don't see what goes into those events you do at the Neat Collective. They just know you, and they know you. And I think when people look at my music, they're not seeing the $500, $600 I just spent to get this song done. They're not seeing the 3-4 days I'm sitting in my room creating melodies and singing. They're not seeing the 12-hour studio session that I just got out of to make this song.
100%.
And they're not seeing all the money and time and like blood, sweat, and tears that I put into this. And I do take it seriously. Yeah. I take my writing very seriously. And I want to make music that feels timeless. I want to make music that has people listening to it for a long time. And I want to make music because I love music and I love what I create and the process of it. I respect the craft. I respect the art form. I respect everything about it and the history. Like, I'll sit, like, I'm going to college right now to as an audio engineer major. I'm receiving a bachelor's in music. I'm going to school taking music theory classes. I'm taking creative writing. I'm taking like communications class so I can learn how to speak in public and be in big crowds. Like, these are things that I have to take, but I could also decide to take other courses. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to take audio engineering. I could have fucking done business, but I wanted to learn about it. I wanted to learn, you know, like, I wanted to learn why certain frequencies make people feel a certain way. I want to learn what rhyme schemes can have an effect on somebody. I want to learn how to build a world inside of a song. I think Frank Ocean's really good at that,
right?
Which is why I even took the creative writing class. I could have taken a basic English class, and I was like, no, I want to take this. And in the first 3 weeks, I was like already seeing a difference in how I was writing my music, because when you listen to it, or not listen, but when you read a short story or you read a book, you can visually see the world that the author is building. You can smell it. You can touch it. You can feel it. You can see the characters' faces. And I almost want to start trying to do that in my music. I want to start world building and creating this visual effect in your mind with nothing but audio. Mm-hmm. Which is like why I hope people start paying attention to what I'm saying in my music.
Yeah.
I feel like when I post a snippet on Instagram, they're just hearing the song and scrolling. Yeah. You're not paying attention to what I'm talking about. Like, Frank Ocean, like, dude, that his music's literally insane. Like, the storytelling is phenomenal. It's literally unreal. Mm-hmm. And that's something that somebody that I take a lot of inspiration from him. I love listening to old school music, like Aretha Franklin. I love her to death. Marvin Sapp is a really big one. I really like Michael Jackson. I grew up listening to Michael Jackson my whole life. Every album I've listened to back to front.
That's my guy.
Yeah. Prince is a huge one. Dude, it's just like too many to fucking remember.
There's so many levels to music that I don't think people really understand. Though I got a glimpse of it when I was in the studio with Cyrus. Even just from like I didn't realize how much the audio engineer actually does. Like, you're with that's Gabe? Insane. Yeah.
Yeah, Gabe's a fucking phenomenal engineer. I love Gabe's my engineer. Even though I live in LA, I send Gabe my stems.
Wow.
Yeah, he's great. It's a lot of work. Everybody has their own unique process. I've been in the studio with Cyrus. We've made music together. And I think some people go in naturally being able to tell a story without having anything pre-written and just punch in lines and make a really nice record. And then there's people that spend days, months creating a song. Is that my phone? Yeah, it is. Sorry, guys.
No, you're good.
But yeah, there's some people that will take 3 months to write a song because they want it to be perfect, you know? And I think it's crazy. That EQing, making sure the compression is right, making sure that everything's in the correct key and BPM. And it's even one thing about Gabe that I love is he's not just your engineer that's pressing record. He's a part of the process.
Dude, he's so involved.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he'll give so many suggestions and, like, I didn't realize you'll say the same line like 3 or 4 times, and in my head it kind of sounds all similar, but no, it's like, nah, this one's the one that we want to use, you know?
Yeah, Gabe, the
perfect transition and shit.
Mm-hmm. Gabe actually, he put me on to the idea of stacking my vocals, which is like kind of
running it over.
Yeah, like, it's basically
finishing off a verse and overlapping like the start of another verse type shit.
Yeah, so it's like if I were to record a line, right, like on What It Is, I would say What It Is 5 more times because it makes it sound fuller. And stacking your vocals is a really common thing in music. It wasn't like anything people have heard of. But me being the guy that recorded on FL Studio in my dorm room, I was like, what do you mean stack my, yeah. my what do you mean I need two higher pitched vocals and then two lows and yeah, and one right. harmony yeah. to make this sound full. And then I started doing it, and that's it dude Gabe elevated my game yeah. when I started recording with Gabe. That's when my music and my taste in music completely changed.
Yeah, that's hard.
Yeah, that's when I started making R&B music. Up to that point I was making like West Coast rap.
Yeah.
And what's your creative process like, bro? Do you punch in? You like to write? Are you a little bit of both?
Every single song that I have out was never written. What never it is written. Was freestyled.
Fire.
So yeah. every, but I'm now starting to learn to write my music and putting pen to paper, because I've realized how important it is to be intentional. And right. So yeah, now my process is a little bit different. I'll come in with at least a rough idea of what I'm going to talk about in the song, what scenes I'm going to describe, what setting I'm going to create, the tone, the cadence. Trying to come in a little bit more prepared, and I also come in now with a plethora of beats, as opposed to in the past I would walk into the room with maybe like two or three beats. Yeah. Now I'm walking into the studio with a 12-hour session with a full package of 8 beats ready to go in case this song doesn't go well. I have this song to work on. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's a lot different now, and I take a lot of a time with what I'm doing. I don't want to rush it. I remember when I was in the studio with Gabe, there was a couple songs where I just needed like two more bars. And I would just say some bullshit
yeah.
just to get the song over with. And right, then it's right. like, I could have said something here that matters. But instead, I decided to do this because I just wanted to get out of there. And I had 10 minutes on my session left. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, being intentional and making sure every single piece of art that I put out now is cohesive is a big part of my writing process now and my recording yeah. process.
Hell yeah. And so, like, going back to what you said about, like, how, like, most of the people that follow you know you, do you feel like... that can be a negative thing, like when it comes to creating, and because I feel like we talk about this all the time, like because you made it a good point, like people know you and like they see one of your songs on Instagram or something, they just see JD, mm-hmm. like they just see you, and but you said on right on the money, like there's so much like things that go behind the scenes that people don't realize. But I feel like when you're just surrounded like people you grew up with, I don't know. Maybe it's like I noticed that it's like random people seem to support a lot more than like people yeah. that you kind of grew up with you. And it's not even a bad. I don't think it's per se a bad thing, but it's just how it is, you know.
Yeah, I think I learned to not take offense to it.
Yeah,
I just learned to more so be happy and excited when people that I am very close with share my music.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. There, it's a weird feeling to see Joe Schmo that follows me that I've met one time at Nice Guy reposting every song that I've made. There's yeah. people that I've maybe hung out with once or twice that repost every single time I post a song.
Yeah.
Or like post my music. And then there's people that I talk to every day on the phone that have never posted it once.
Yeah.
And it's not like I take offense to it. It's more so like I don't think people understand how much of an impact they have on like your art, you know. Yeah. This podcast can, your lives can completely change if 100 people really like supported you fully. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like if I think about that all the time, dude. I'm like, people don't understand, like my friends don't understand, like you guys can directly like impact and change my life.
Right?
Like literally it starts with one person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All it would take is for one person to repost or comment and boost that opportunity for the next person to see it. And that next person could be, dude, Tyler the Creator found, I think it was Rex Orange County. He found them on YouTube with like 100 views. You never know who's watching.
Yeah.
You could repost my song and somebody that follows you that has some sort of influence could be like, oh, this is fire, and reach out to me personally.
Yeah.
And I'm not begging for it. I'm not going to sit here and be mad that nobody's reposting yeah. my music or nobody's like messing with it the way that I want them to. I can't force that. But that just means when the day it comes and I do make something that everybody really likes and they're showing love to, then that's how I know that I did something good. You know what yeah. I mean? Because I've been doing it for so long now where it's like I know what reaction to expect and what may be unexpected.
Yeah.
I think the day where I have a song do, not necessarily viral, but just do well online, when that day comes, that's going to be such a like surreal feeling. It's going to be for so sure. fire. I'm looking forward to it.
Right. It's fire.
And you're right, because it's coming, bro, especially like, it's inevitable. You keep putting in the time, you keep it's easy to get discouraged about it, mm-hmm. but I feel like one thing that has really helped me is kind of like, and it happened when like we met Eddie, just having a little bit more faith, bro, because I was looking at things at a very like how would you say it, what's the word? I want to say realistic, but I don't know. Like, it's just, I was
very hard on
sure.
Yeah.
But I think ever since, like, I feel like meeting Eddie, it's just like, no, like, if you put that into that energy into the world and you put your faith into that, dude, it's just like, the world's going to pay you back, bro, mm-hmm. at some point.
Yeah.
Tenfold, bro.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Did the battery die? Yeah. I'm going to change it real quick.
And this kid's got an amazing voice, like, crazy singer.
Yeah.
And he was like, we were in a session together and I was singing and he walks into my session. I'm not knowing he's there. Mm-hmm. I walk out of the booth and he goes, yo, your voice is crazy.
He went in there with no like previous bias of who you are. Like, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, he just hears good music, bro. And that's the downfall of people knowing you is I feel like they make that connection of like, oh, it's just JD. Or, yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Or like vice versa, even with us. Like, oh, it's just Diego and James.
Yeah.
Like, they can't make that connection.
In fact, it's Diego and James. How come I haven't been on the podcast?
Yo.
Literally.
And literally, you go back and you're like, dude, there's not a single like on any post. Like,
dude.
I just followed us today, as a matter of fact. Like,
one thing, this is going to sound so, like, crazy. I don't look down on anybody that makes music in El Paso. I am literally nobody. But I hate when I see people that aren't putting in nearly as much of work as I'm putting in, and or just as much work as they should be putting in for themselves. And then I'll get a DM being like, yo, how come I ain't got a verse yet? Or how come I ain't got a hook from you yet? It's like, bro, like, you don't even have a single song out.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm not going to charge for a feature. Like I said, I'm nobody. I'm not going to charge anybody for a feature, but it's like, I'm not going to make a song with somebody that doesn't care about it and is just making music because they want to look cool.
Yeah,
I'm not making music to look cool. I'm making music because I love this shit so much. Like, I could give a fuck if I go to a club and I'm fucking in a booth and there's mad people that know who I am there. That shit means nothing to me.
Right.
What means something to me is somebody playing my song at their wedding or somebody like having my song be a part of like this moment in their life. Somebody listening to my song before a fucking baseball game or going to the gym and like stuff like that is what's cool to me. Driving with their significant other on a road trip and they're bumping my album. That's the shit that I want to fucking hear. I don't want to go to a club and get free bottles because I'm this person.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
for sure. And so what's been your experience? Well, first of all, what made you make the leap to Los Angeles and leaving El Paso / Alamogordo?
So when I was learning I was getting out the military, I knew that I was moving back to Stockton. Mm. So now knowing that I was moving back to California and understanding that I'm going back to my normal life, I had to make the decision to either A, go to school in San Francisco, or I was going to go to school in LA. I didn't give myself any alternative. And the only reason being is because those are two cities where the scene is big enough to where I can make something happen. And I'm not saying you can't make something happen from a small town. There's plenty of people from El Paso that have made shit happen. Evander's made something happen. Khalid made it happen. Cigarettes After Sex made it happen. There's a lot of examples. In Stockton, there's a huge rap scene. But in Stockton, I would have been competing with guys who are not only affiliated and very well known around California to be like hard, like gang members. And like that scene of rap is just very violent.
Yeah.
That's not my scene of rap.
Right. You would have needed to have like a legit entourage with you, bro.
Exactly.
Like people that like heavy hitters that stand with you.
Mm-hmm. And it's crazy because a lot of those guys, I don't know if you guys know anything about Stockton rap, but have you ever heard of like EBK J-Bo?
I heard of EBK.
Yeah.
Is it like a group or like a gang?
Yeah, basically. They're a group. I'm not going to say they're a gang. They're a group. But they're hard, bro. They're fucking tight. And I remember a couple of the guys that rap underneath them. When I was in high school, I used to have a podcast called JSN, and I interviewed them. You can look it up on YouTube, JSN Podcast Interviews MBO. And so some of those guys that are in that rap group, like, are also a part of that group of people. And, I would have just been competing with guys in a scene that isn't seeking after, like, R&B or player, like, style rap music. They're trying to listen to something that gets them going, like heavy 808s and a crazy like background story. And it's like, I don't rap like that. I'm never going to rap like that. I don't live that life. You know what I mean?
Right.
But Stockton's rap scene is huge. I'd say in Northern California, Stockton easily has the biggest rap scene. Also, probably the most talented. There's guys like EBK J-Bo drops a song. It's getting 2-3 million views in 24 hours or like in a couple days.
Damn.
Like he's going crazy. Young Jock's going crazy. Haiti Baby goes crazy.
Yeah.
MB Nell is a phenomenal rapper from Stockton. And these are all guys that I was like in high school listening to, and they're killing it. And yeah, Stockton's rap scenes, it's coming up for sure. There's a lot of underground guys that are, there's a lot of underground guys in Stockton that are on the come up. There's a one guy that I know, Keep It Peasy. He's coming up. He's on the rise. Yeah, dude, Dadx. There's Stockton's got its own scene for sure.
Yeah. So you decided to go to school in LA?
Yeah. I've just walked around that whole question. I'm sorry.
Oh no, you're good.
Yeah. I think what made me want to move to LA instead of going to San Francisco is in San Francisco I would have been kind of competing with those same people in that same scene. LA is a little bit different. LA's open format. There's everything there. And the school that I was going, that I applied to, has the direct program that I wanted. And it just made more sense. If I want to make music and I want to do media, what better place to be in than LA? Mm-hmm. It would make zero sense for me to go to fucking Sacramento. There's nothing there. Or San Francisco. There's opportunity in San Francisco, but it's a lot more niche. LA's this. Yeah. It's a open fucking, it's everything. So that definitely drove my decision, and I just made the jump, dude. I moved to LA with $350 in my pocket, and I drove everything in my car and got there, and just got my apartment. I'm moving in next week.
Damn.
Got a nice little spot, and then man, things are turning around. Yeah. I'm happy.
We can go to Austin next week, motherfucker.
This just happened to you, all, bro.
If it wasn't for my cousin, shout out Hop. If it wasn't for Hop, I would not be able to live in LA. Like he gave me, because the GI Bill is what's getting me paid. I'm getting low-key stupid paper for going to school.
That's and, good.
Fine. So shout out the government for that one. But my cousin Hop, he was looking out for me crazy, because I didn't start getting paid until I started going to school, and I didn't start school for another month. So I'm like, I got fucking $400. I got a fucking 2014 Audi that takes 20 gallons of fucking gas, and I need to eat, and I need to pay my fucking car note. Like, I'm fucked. Like, I moved, and I was like, I'm a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
And then he was like, just come stay at the crib, and full took care of me to the fullest. And yeah, my big cousin looked out. But yeah, bro, moved out to LA with, I think it was like $350-$400. Literally nothing, dude. I did not have enough money to fucking move, but I did it.
That's hard. Badass, it's now or fucking ever.
Yeah, literally, so, man.
Dude, make your fucking move. Quit being a bitch.
Quit being a fucking bitch.
Hey, I'm ready, my friends.
Dude, especially Austin, y'all could do it.
Yeah, for sure.
Start applying for fucking, that's life advice we can get into off topic. Yeah, do it, bro. Fuck it, that shit's fire. And that scene, bro, Austin's got the craziest comedy and podcast scene. That's literally the mecca for like live talk shows and that, what you guys are doing, that's literally the mecca. I wouldn't move to Austin for music, but if I was doing this, dude, Austin for sure.
Well, even because I heard live music scene in Austin is really good.
Yeah, it's getting there.
Yeah. But LA is still the mecca of music.
Yeah, right? I'd say LA, Atlanta, New York. But in terms of just stage entertainment, when it comes down to like stand up comedy or spoken word or like that type of stuff where it's no music, I think Austin's just where it's at. Austin and I think that they really just take the cake, dude. That scene is, I went out there twice and I was, dude, this shit is fucking amazing.
It's just lit
for sure. And bro, that makes me excited.
Austin is it for sure.
So what was the first time you, because you said you didn't make your first song till 2022, but you were always musically inclined. So at what point, what made you be like, yo, I'm just going to make my first song?
The homie that I was saying, his name, I call him Slime. He actually, I probably shouldn't be calling him Slime now that I think about it. Anyways, he had a home studio in his barracks room, and he invited me over to just watch him make music. We were playing 2K, and then he put on a beat, and I just started humming. And I was just like, just fucking around. I wasn't being serious. And he was like, go ahead. And he just gave me headphones, literally gave me no choice and just gave me headphones, and I did it. And then I was just listening to the song I made, and I was like, whoa, I just made a song. I listened to that song.
You were
song
just freestyling
now.
Or
it was terrible. I listened to that song now and I cringe, like it's terrible, but it's such a fond memory. And dude, he literally was the catalyst. I gave all credit to him. He's the catalyst for what I do now. And I'll send him music now, and he'll be like, I want you to get back in your old bag. I'm like, hell no, I'm not doing that shit again. What old bag are you talking about? That shit was trash. But there was like a solid 4 months of me just practicing making music before I actually put out my first song. And yeah, I ended up taking down the music that I had out in 2022 just because I wasn't proud of it, and it wasn't intentional, and there wasn't any substance right. in what I had put out. It was just me having fun making music. It's still on SoundCloud though. Yeah. SoundCloud was the one place where I was like, I'm never taking music off of SoundCloud. I'm always going to keep it there.
Yeah.
Cause that's like my archive. That's like my little archive.
And when did you realize that you wanted to take it serious?
I think the first time I started taking it really serious was when I made a song called Nobody, because I made Nobody and I was getting DMs from people like that I never knew. And, Nobody was a big one, and then I made Perfect Timing, and then I started like putting money towards my music, and then I met Gabe. And I think that like 3 month time span between, I want to say, January and March of 2023 was when I was like, yeah, this is it, this is what I'm going to be doing. And that was a really, really, really big piece. And ever since then it's been running gun. I'm just going.
And was it ever in the back of your mind, like before that moment where you were in the studio with your boy, was it ever like in the back of your mind, like after the military, I want to be an artist, I want to make music?
Not really. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew for sure when I got out the military, I was going to go to college. I very much value the fact that I have the opportunity to go to school because the military is paying for it and paying me to do it. So I'm like, it would be dumb of me to just throw that away.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I think we're in a time right now where you'd actually need a degree. There was like, when we were growing up, we knew a ton of people that never got a degree and were fine. I think we're in a time and place right now where like getting like an education in anything is so valuable now. I was like, it would just be a waste if I just didn't go to school.
Right.
I always thought I was just going to go to college. I didn't think I was going to make music full time. But here we are, making music full time and going to college.
And what was that? It was just like the simple, like, was it the fact that you just enjoyed it? Like, you just had fun in the stew?
Yeah, I just had fun, bro. I remember being in high school and my friends were like SoundCloud rappers back in like 2016, 2015. And like, we were all in high school just having fun, and they were all making SoundCloud rap. And I used to beg them, I used to be like, bro, please let me go to the studio with you. Like, I want to have fun too. And, bro, like back in high school, I had a fucking Bieber cut. I had braces. I had a squeaky voice because I didn't hit puberty until I was like 16, 17. And I remember just like, it would just, they were always just like, nah, like next time, next time, next time, next time. Never. No and way. These are like my best friends too.
It's crazy.
Yeah, my dogs. So I ended up never recording anything until that day and on bass. I was always, you know, playing the drums and. I sucked at school band because I never actually learned how to read music. I was just playing things by ear, which they hate. And I was also not like the best, you know what I mean? But when I was interested, like when I started playing drums for the church, like that stuff I was like actually good at. Like those were things that I was naturally able to do.
And what was your first live performance like?
Dude, it was at a bar in El Paso called Lucky Dog.
Dude, I've been there. It's like right down the street.
Yeah. It was at Lucky Dog. It was my first performance. I didn't know anybody. It was through Ill Music, and I performed a bunch of terrible songs that will never see the light of day.
How do you feel like going up there? And
dude, I felt so fucking nervous. I looked like an idiot, dude. I fucking came. It was a rap show, bro. I showed up in bell bottom slacks and a fucking wife beater and a comb over. I looked crazy as fuck, and I had the best time. But
it's fire.
Yeah, looking back on it, I was so nervous. This guy named Isaiah Moore, who's a good friend of mine.
Yeah,
Isaiah Moore is a good friend of mine now, but. I looked at him like he was the big dog in the room because he came in with like 30, 40 friends from Fort Bliss.
Yeah.
Brought a bunch of homies, and he was the headliner, and he was so cool. He had fucking sunglasses and a flannel on, and I came in looking like a bum, and I was like, fuck, this dude's the shit. And he got on stage, and people had their phones out and were singing his songs. People knew his lyrics.
Yeah, that's fine.
And I remember after the show was over, I was like, yo, I would love to make music with you. And Isaiah was like, yeah. Walked out the fucking building. Dude. But no, we're actually hella cool now. Like, he's fucking a phenomenal guy. I love Isaiah. He's a great dude.
Yeah, I don't think we haven't met him in person, but we've exchanged some some words for sure. He seems like a really cool dude.
Yeah, he's the shit.
Yeah. Very. Actually, I never met him officially either, but then one of the homies, I actually sold him an Audi at the dealership. His name is Colin.
He
boxes, bro, and he was the one that was telling me about him. He was like, yeah, that's my homie, man. Like, you should put him on the pod and shit. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Speaking of boxing, shout out to your homie, the MMA fighter.
Oh, Victor?
Vic. Yeah. Hard, dude. Because I do jiu-jitsu. I have my blue belt in jiu-jitsu. When I see Vic, like, doing his thing, I'm like, he's fucking talented, bro. Yeah, he's crazy. Sure. So shout out Vic.
Yeah, maybe you can go to his next fight if you're.
I would love to.
Something 26th? Oh, no, that's
October 26th, yeah.
Okay. I would love to, bro. He's fire.
Doing a CFC one?
Yeah, for sure.
Future UFC champ.
Bro. I mean, bro, he has all the tools, man.
Fuck
yeah. Like, and even just his personality, he's got everything.
He has the swag and shit.
Yeah,
he might be the next Mexican, you know, hot shit around the UFC. You know,
they gonna see his the MVP podcast one day. That was the first podcast he did. So,
dude, he's got, you know what? What I did, that's one of the episodes I watched. He's just got a really good mindset.
Yeah,
and he's really driven, and he's fucking like, he's about it, bro, and he cares. So, I fuck with Vic.
Yeah,
he's doing it right.
We've never talked in person, but.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll meet him. Hopefully on the mental health day.
Hopefully.
I feel like everybody's gonna come out for that one. So, I was gonna say something. Oh, so what was like your experience in the nightlife like? Because you were doing it pretty hard, bro. Thursday through Sunday. Yes. So like, what was that like?
It was cool, bro. I think everybody kind of just knew me as a photographer. I wasn't the guy that made music. I was the guy that took pictures for Madhouse, and it was a cool experience. I got to make a lot of new friends. I met so many people that way, and some of my closest friends now are from that experience, and it was cool. There was definitely some weekends where I was walking in and I'd be like, fuck dude, like I don't want to be here. And especially because I had other ambitions, and to walk into a bar and hear the same music and see the same people and do the same fucking thing, like it definitely got repetitive. But the one thing that made it for me was the people. Seeing that new person walk in and chatting it up with them. If there's one thing about the nightlife here that I really enjoy is I've never had a bad experience like going to work, and I've always enjoyed the people. In terms of the city of El Paso, there's nothing like the people here.
Mm-hmm.
In LA, you will never get that. In Austin, you will never get that. El Paso, in terms of quality of people, they got it.
How would you describe it? Like just the people.
If I had to build a setting as to why I feel that way, I would say meeting somebody from El Paso and being introduced to their friends or their family is like the equivalent of walking into a house where you don't know anybody. And as soon as you walk in, you feel like you've known them for years. And there's food for you there, and it's warm, and there's a fucking game or a fight on the TV, and everybody's fucking cheering and having a good time, and you're sharing memories with people that you just met fucking 10 minutes ago. It's like, it's that feeling of like, I don't need to know you, but I get along with you.
Right.
And I've never not gone along with anybody here. I love this city.
It's the cultures everywhere else is a lot much more like of the intimidation factor.
Mysterious.
Like, right. Like we already have our group, like, you know, kind of stay away kind of mentality.
Yeah.
No?
Mm-hmm. I feel it. Yeah. Sure. No, I agree with you.
Yeah. That's kind of wild, dude. Cause you have like your personality is like, you have a big personality, and it feels like you can make friends really easy. Like, you're just comfortable, bro. Bro, like, literally, the first time we had exchanged, like, words on IG and stuff, but we had never met in person. Then I seen you at Nice Guy.
Right.
And then it's just like, yo!
That was so natural, bro.
Like, what's my episode type shit?
I was that one guy.
No, but, like, that shit worked with you, bro, because it was like, you definitely, like, you just, the energy
just
came
off.
Yeah,
it felt real, real, like, you know what I'm saying? It was genuine, bro.
For sure.
Came from a good place.
Me and him kicked it off on Sunday.
Yeah.
That was fire. Me and him had a good time.
For sure.
I love, I don't know. I think I just love people. I get that from my dad, for sure. I'm going to just leave it at that. I get that from him. I get definitely that extroverted mentality, personality trait.
Yeah.
I feel like I don't want to be the center of attention, but I want people to feel welcome when they're around me. So I love like when people walk into the room and I don't know you, but you're with people. I know like you were there, right? And he came up to me and dapped me up, and I was like, what's fucking good, bro? I dapped him up, fucking brought him in, and was like, that's how I want to be. Like, I'm no better than anybody in the room, and I'm nobody special. Like, I want everybody to feel welcome when I'm around, and Yeah, I just love meeting people, bro.
For sure.
Yeah.
It's just going to take you far,
I just
bro.
Love life. Nah. And so we actually have a lot of, not a lot, but we have a very special upcoming event that we're actually collaborating on.
Mm-hmm.
October 10th.
I'm flying back
World
out.
Mental Health Day.
So mm-hmm. get your hair right.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be exciting, man. I think you haven't been a NEEP yet, right?
I haven't been a NEEP yet. This is honestly a show, like once I film this next snippet, like this is going to be the first show where I really push hard.
Mm-hmm.
If you are not doing anything on October 10th, I need you to be at the NEEP Collective because we're going to have a fucking ball. I'm going to play some of the best music that I've ever made. We're going to talk about really important topics. We're going to welcome each other. We're going to have a good time and we're going to make everybody feel loved and cared about. And, it's going to be an open space for everybody to just come and have fun. So yeah,
100%.
I'm looking forward to that for sure.
Any better, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And come get a workout in too.
Oh, for sure.
Nah, we're going to be sweating. We're going to be in that cold plunge.
We're going to be moving and grooving, baby.
Yeah, for sure.
I might jump in that cold plunge before I go on stage.
Bro, that's going to be a...
It's going to get you right.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Have you done one?
Yeah, me and my cousin actually just bought one for the house in Huntington.
Damn.
Oh, dude. I did the cryo freezer. You ever go to the UFC gym and they have that freezer? I did that, bro. I got out, my fucking nipples were all hard. I'm all fucking
purple.
I'm all purple, frosty.
Yeah.
Shit felt great. I was like all shivering.
No, I bet that cold plunge before a performance is like, it'll be actually literally good the best. For you.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, man. Well, something we've never done on the Most Vulnerable Player.
Uh-oh.
JD. Yeah, man.
We can't have an artist on the MVP and can't have him come and back it up. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Yeah. So Mr. JD is going to give us a little snippet of something maybe you can expect on October 10th. And we're excited, man. We've never done this on the pod, but he's gonna spit a few bars for you guys.
We want some off the top, man. Freestyle vibes.
I'm going to try to give 12. Okay. If I can get to 12 bars, I'll call it a day.
And we need 15 good seconds, 10 seconds.
And then Mr. Curry's next after that.
crazy.
You got to finish it up.
I'm not hopping on.
You got to, bro. How about Mr. Vixter?
If he needs to pick me up, bro, I'm coming through.
All right, bet.
Let's get it.
All right, what we got on the...
Yo, DJ, spin that shit. Yeah, for real.
Can you record this, Vic?
Bro, we're gonna need like an official plug, bro, for when this happens again.
Oh, dude.
Like, yo, Diego, spin that shit, cuz.
Oh, dude, I'm gonna need to be like, I don't know.
Can you hear the?
I can hear it good. Yeah.
Hey.
I'm gonna need James on the ad libs. Hey, I'm gonna need Diego on my stacks.
Yeah.
I'm gonna need everybody there on October 10th at the Neat Collective.
Right.
Neat Collective, we finna get you right.
Sheesh.
Hey. Yeah. Look. Hey. When I look into y'all eyes, swear to God, I think my heart cried. Bark drive, sipping 42 until my heart's dry. And I can't let you gas me up to move the wrong way. If I gotta move cautious, I don't give a fuck if it's a long way. I'm star made. Every time I step, you'll see these ball mains. And I ain't worried about shit. If I said it, I'ma stand straight. Lost Marcus and Big J. Man, it's getting heavy. Motherfucker saying that I'm done. Man, I'm just getting ready for real. Hey,
okay.
Give a fuck about how you feel. Hey. You fuck around, I get you. Hey, look.
You're next.
And didn't you know? Didn't you know?
Yeah.
Didn't you know?
That's hard.
Oh, didn't wait, you're next?
Know? Nah, yeah. Bullshit, come on. Give me some.
You trying to turn me up?
Give me some, twin.
Okay. Didn't you know, nigga pop hoes? I'm out here with my niggas popping them hoes. Hold on. Didn't you know? Didn't you know? It's me and my niggas, we stepping when we running this shit.
Yo.
Didn't you know? My niggas, they killers, they pull up, they popping them blicks.
Uh-huh.
Didn't you know? My nigga, he pull up, he get it.
Yo, that was hard.
Hey,
didn't you know?
Hey,
popping that photos, I'm popping them bows.
Okay.
Feel like I'm running this bitch and I feel like I'm Bo Jackson.
Yeah.
Finna go up and I'm turning it up. Finna grab my dick like I feel like Jackson.
Yeah.
Finna like my.
Oh man, that's the MVP.
And that's it, man.
Episode just like that. 51 of the Most Vulnerable.
Hooray.
You know it, you dig.
We will see you October 10th.
Very much looking forward to it.
Yes, sir.
And if you didn't know,
now you know.
Now you fucking know. JD, certified.